about this.
These two
people.
I am geeking out.
To the Geeks Unleashed podcast.
Mark.
Jasmine.
What a nerd.
Nerd alert.
Unleashed.
Television.
What are you talking about?
Anything can be a podcast.
Video game.
Geek.
What is a geek?
Oh, hi, Mark.
The whole point is, of course, the plot is.
You guys have great conversation.
I am geeking out.
Unleashed.
Movies. People love movies.
All right, you guys, podcast time.
You're listening to the Geeks Unleashed podcast. Part of the BCP Bad Batch. We take our passions and our fandoms and we turn them into conversations with you.
Hello, welcome to Geeks Unleashed. This is episode 156. I'm Mark.
I'm Jasmine.
Each week on the Geeks Unleashed podcast, we bring you a catch-up from something from our pop culture lives. And review of something adapted from the comic book or gaming world.
Yes, and before we get started, if you're watching on YouTube, thank you so much. We appreciate that. We would also love it if you would like this video and subscribe to our channel. And if you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, we appreciate that as well. We'd also very much love it if you would leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser.
Also, please donate to our Ko-Fi. We would appreciate it greatly. Right, we're going to jump straight into this week's Geek of the Week before we continue our X-related themes. So do you want to go first or should I go first?
I'll go. Okay. I actually have something to show this time for those of you that are watching on YouTube. So my Geek of the Week is volume 2 of The Dangerous Convenience Store, which was a webtoon for several years, and now it is available in print. I loved the webcomic. I read it to its completion, all of the side stories and everything. And when I found out it was available in print, I started to buy it, and I'm a little late, albeit. But I finally read volume 2. It came out in February, so I'm only like a month behind, but I just love having a hard copy of a story that I enjoyed so much digitally. Cause you guys know I'm a digital girl. So usually I'm reading all of my comics and everything like that digitally. So it says a lot if I pay for it digital and then I turn around and pay for it in print also. So that's what I've been reading. I can't open it, because this entire volume is very, very risque. So all you get to see is the cover, but I can't show you the inside.
I know what you mean. It's like when we did the book club the other day, when although I have the graphic novel of Man Without Fear, I was like, oh, I want now the single issues. So I don't love digital, but I have read stuff digitally. But
yeah.
But no, I do agree. There's sometimes something about having the hard copy or whatever. There's certain books that we've done throughout this duration of this podcast I have rented digitally, and I'm not bothered about having originals, but there are some that I'm like, no, I need to own that. Okay, so I stay away from manga stuff because not only because I know what I'm like, it's nothing to do with manga. I know that, I think I've said this on the podcast before, if I buy like volume 1, I don't want to be here on volume 152, and at £10 a pop, they're a lot of money. So
Yeah, these are not cheap, especially because these are converted from Korean instead of Japanese. Like the market is not as big for these kinds. So this cost me $20.
Wow. And how many other volumes are there?
Well, they're translating it. So this is only the second one to make it to English. The third volume.
Yeah, but how many will there be, do you reckon?
I'm not sure. If I had to guess, I would probably say between 8 and 10 for the whole story.
But it's not life-shattering, and also if it's coming out like once or twice a year.
Twice a year.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the end of the world. So.
Yeah.
But then the trouble is, I reckon you get into it, and you'll probably pick up others. So
yeah,
I've literally sworn to stay away from manga just because it's like I get comics and, you know, I do other things and go and watch football now, apparently.
You're welcome. Your daughter loved it.
But I can't get into manga as well. So, right, my Geek of the Week is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. So the follow-on from the original 80s movies. We had...
Wait, what do you mean a follow-on from the 80s movies?
So you know the original ones with...
Yeah, but did they skip the one that came out a few years ago?
Well, the woman one. The female one?
No, the one with Paul Rudd that came out a couple
of years. Yeah. This is the sequel to that.
Okay.
So So yeah, that's what I'm saying. So we had the two.
I see, I see.
So we had the two in the 80s, and then we had the Paul Rudd one that came out a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But the tone of that was very much serious. They it's like they hadn't watched the originals, and so this one is very much in line with the tone of the originals. But it's update. I mean, obviously, it's updated. It's modern. They've kept a little bit of seriousness. But I would say there's a lot more humor in here. Obviously, visuals are that of something from 2024. However, there are moments. So I went to see this with my wife and kids, and we were just, there was points where me and my wife were just dying. There's some good humor in here, and it's not just from Paul Rudd. Even Bill Murray. Oh, he has a brilliant scene. Honestly, he has a thing. You know, do you remember in the first movie where he's testing people and he's got the buzzer and the little electric thing, whatever. Do you remember that?
Yes.
There's a play on that in this movie where he's asking someone questions. And throughout the duration of asking him questions, he keeps throwing pens at their face. And it's just so ridiculous. And even some of his questions are like, would you eat a child? And the person was like, a human child? And they're like, and he's like, what other kind of child is it? And then he's like, it's just, oh, honestly, the banter, oh, it's just so good. And then they've got a much younger cast as well, like the younger generation, the Spenglers, the grandchildren, and they've got some friends as well that they carried over from the last one that had Paul Rudd in it. They're hilarious as well. Honestly, I really couldn't recommend this movie enough. It's a real feel-good film as well. There's just, it's in New York. They're in the firehouse. They're using the car. Everyone's in it, basically. They brought across, I can't remember the lady's name now, the one with the glasses who is the receptionist from the first two movies. She's in it. Yeah. So honestly, really recommend it. Didn't we review the first one on here? I forgot.
We did.
Yeah, I thought we did. Yeah. So obviously, Jasmine, you should watch it.
I might. I enjoyed that last one. So
yeah. So the last one was mostly serious with tiny elements from Paul Rudd funny, and the original cast didn't really show up until the end.
Yeah,
they are in it throughout. I mean, whilst they're not the leads,
mm-hmm.
they have bigger roles than the last one. So yeah. I think
from the trailers, it looks like the Stay Puft little tiny marshmallow men come back too. Yes.
Yeah, they're in it as well.
They're so cute.
Slimer's in it, and he's got several scenes in it.
Slimer. Love.
What I loved about the movie as well was the original cast were in it throughout the movie. They weren't the main characters, but they were in it enough that it felt like it was a real follow-on from those original 80s movies. But I don't want to give anything away here, but you know, there's obviously a villain and there's a confrontation. What I loved was that the kind of next generation Ghostbusters are doing one thing whilst the original cast kind of go and do something else together to stop the bad guy. And I love that they all came together to kind of get involved. So I don't know. And at the end, obviously, who doesn't love the music when it kicks in? So.
Yes, of course.
And what's his name? Is it, what's the guy who did the original song, Ray?
That I don't know.
So at the beginning of the movie, they showed some clips from the original films, but they made a music video. Do you remember they did a music video at the time for Ghostbusters?
No.
And the original actors from the film were in the video, and they were kind of like walking through Times Square in the music video. Anyway, they clipped a little bit of that and put it in this film, as if that actually happened in the film, in the continuity of these movies. But anyway, it's really good. You should watch it. So anyone listening should watch it.
It's on the list.
And I kept thinking, I'm not sure what I'd rate it, but it's got to be something around 4 to 5. So honestly, it was really good.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, I enjoyed it immensely. So
yeah,
okay. And the fact that my wife hated the last one because she didn't like that it had no connection to the last two in terms of, it did have a connection, but they dumped the tone of the fact that the last two are comedies. The last one was a lot more serious than Paul Rudd one. This one, seriousness, but there was humor, and she was dying, and she said this was so much better than the last one. So if she didn't like it, the last one, and she like thought this was really good, I really loved this film. So hopefully people that... What I'm trying to say is if you didn't like the last one of Paul Rudd, please give this a go.
There you go. There you have it, folks.
Right, let's jump into our main event. So X-Men 2002, directed by Bryan Singer. Screenplay is by David Hayter, based on characters from Marvel Comics.
Yes, and it stars Patrick Stewart as Charles Xavier, Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, Ian McKellen as Magneto, Famke Janssen as Jean Grey, James Marsden as Cyclops, Halle Berry as Storm, Anne Paquin as Rogue, Tyler Mayne as Sabretooth, Ray Park as Toad, Rebecca Romijn as Mystique, and Bruce Davison as Senator Kelly.
So some various first appearances. Now, of the X-Men that we did see, that made the first appearance at the very start was Magneto, Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Xavier. They appeared in the X-Men issue 1, which came out in September 1963 from Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
Okay,
so that's all the way to the start. Wolverine made his first appearance in The Incredible Hulk issue 180 in November 1974 by Len Wein and Herb Trimby, I think.
I didn't expect Wolverine to come in that late.
It came much later. And also, it's got, that comic is worth a fair amount of money. Mm-hmm. So, Storm was part of the second generation of X-Men. She came in Giant Size X-Men issue 1 in 1975, also written by Len Wein and artist Dave Cockrum. Rogue appeared in Avengers Annual issue 10 in August 1981 by Chris Claremont and Michael Golden. Sabretooth showed up in Iron Fist issue 14 from August 1977, also by Chris Claremont and John Byrne.
That's an interesting introduction into Iron Fist.
And do you know what? When I was putting this together, I was like, wow, really? And then Toad, he showed up in X-Men issue 4, which was in March 1964 by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. But I did notice some themes here. So, you know, like with Rogue in Avengers and Sabretooth in Iron Fist by Chris Claremont. So he's one of the huge, X-Men writers responsible for some various... important storylines like the Dark Phoenix saga, and has written a huge chunk of X-Men books. And it's funny to me that he was put on non-X-Men books, and he's created some really important mutant characters that we're going to talk about now. So, it's crazy to see the influence that Chris Claremont had even outside of the X-Men run.
Yeah, interesting. That's quite a crossover to me. Like, some things you can definitely understand, especially anything that's happening in New York City. Like, anytime those characters cross over, it makes sense. Like, it wouldn't surprise me to see a Spider-Man pop up in an Iron Fist book, but like Sabretooth of all people popping up in an Iron Fist book is a bit weird.
A lot of Marvel comics are all in and around New York, so. The difference between DC, which has made up cities like Gotham and Metropolis, and the likelihood of them running into each other is quite few and far between, but the crossover elements in the Marvel comics is quite common, I would imagine. I've always thought if I was a Marvel comic book character, as in I was just a normal bystander, I would not live in New York. I just wouldn't do it. If I was born in New York, living in somewhere,
Spider-Man probably, and all those other people, you would peace out.
Well, I think, to be honest with you, most of the destruction seems to happen within Times Square. I would not be living there. I'd relocate to Queens. So, Spider-Man shows up occasionally, so you could probably live with every couple of years as a battle, but if Central Park's getting invaded every other summer by aliens, I don't think I'm staying in New York.
He's like, no, it's not happening. We're moving.
No. I think that's the thing with DC. I do like the fact that it's spread out across America rather than it being mainly concentrated. I do know that Marvel has deviated a lot more from that. When they've announced the recent X-Men books that are going to come out in the summer, they're not all going to be around New York. So I think one's going to be in New Orleans, and I think one in Alaska or somewhere. I can't remember now, but I like the fact that it's not all New York. I mean, so X-Men haven't been living in New York for the last 5 or 6 years anyway. They've been living on an island. So that they are changing things up. The Spider-Man will always be New York through and through. So, but yeah, I don't know. But to come back to your point about Sabretooth showing up in Iron Fist book, yeah, I guess Iron Fist probably was in New York, but I don't know what the story was. I've never read Iron Fist, to be honest, but I definitely haven't read the first appearance of Sabretooth. But yeah, no, I'm interested. It makes you now want to go back and read those first appearances to see
what that crossover is like.
Maybe that's something we could do at some point. We'll talk about that another time. Maybe. Right, so this movie was released on the 14th of July in the year 2000, so quite some time ago. 1 hour and 44 minutes is the running time, with a budget of $75 million. I can see your note there that they put that this was slightly lower on purpose because Fox was nervous following the TV movie of Generation X, which we reviewed on our last episode. So, and that makes sense, really. And I think you can see that low budget through this film. So anyway, the box office, though, $300 million.
That's a heck of a return. That feels like this is the film that turned the tide for superhero movies, honestly.
Mm-hmm. So,
all right. So, fun facts. I got a lot of casting stuff, but before I get to the casting, I got to talk about Rebecca Romijn and all of the prosthetics and makeup that went into Mystique, because I thought it was insane. Her makeup took 9 hours every time to put it on. 9 hours, because there were hundreds of individual little pieces of prosthetic that they had to put on, and then they had to spray paint her. And everything was so, like, I don't know, specialized that she could not use her own lotion. She could not use any kind of creams. She couldn't drink alcohol. She couldn't fly. Like, she couldn't do anything to alter her own body's chemistry because it would mess up the makeup. And so, like, on her very last day of filming was the sequence that they filmed on Ellis Island when her and Wolverine are fighting. And in that scene, but, like, because she was not able to drink alcohol for the duration of the filming, since it was her last day, she had been drinking tequila. She brought a whole bottle of tequila. She was sharing it with all the people on set. And then when it came time to film this scene, she had been drinking, so maybe a little bit tipsy. But because of all the action in the scene, she threw up on Hugh Jackman, and all of her vomit was blue. Which I was like, at that point, I would feel like I am definitely turning into an alien. Like, there's no way I should be vomiting blue. Blue anything. Yeah. So yeah, that was pretty crazy. And most of her makeup, they said that the makeup and the prosthetics, well, the prosthetics made up like 60% of her outfit, and the rest of it is kind of like spray paint and makeup and all of those things. I can't imagine 9 hours. Like, ugh. How long does it take to come off? Like, is the question. Because if I sit down for 9 hours or stand up for 9 hours for you guys to put all this on, like, how long does it take to come off? Anyway, that's wild. Casting. So, this I did not know. Now, Bryan Singer's first choice for Wolverine was actually Russell Crowe. But Russell Crowe said no, because he had just, like, he was doing Gladiator, and he was like, I don't want to play that character again. And so then they went through so many different people. Mel Gibson, Aaron Eckhart, Ed Norton, Bob Hoskins, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Viggo Mortensen, Gary Sinise, Keanu Reeves, all of them were in the running to be Wolverine. And ultimately, they actually cast Dougray Scott, and he was in it. They had started filming, but he was also doing pre-photography stuff for Mission Impossible 2. He got into a motorcycle accident and then was out for a bit. And because of the accident, that bled into the Mission Impossible 2 filming. So he had to pull out of the film. So he was cast, he was already playing Wolverine, he had to pull out of the film. And Russell Crowe was the one who suggested Bryan Singer look at Hugh Jackman. Bryan Singer had never heard of Hugh Jackman. So they were like, okay, fine, we'll give this guy a chance because Russell's, you know, this was Russell Crowe's suggestion. They hire Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman starts as Wolverine when they had already started filming. So he's coming in. He has no time to like get into character or anything like that. And he was not doing a great job playing Wolverine, to the point where the producers were like, yo, look, man, you got to get your shit together because like, we're not liking the dailies that we're seeing, like figure it out. And Hugh Jackman had said that he had a really hard time getting in the headspace of Wolverine at first, which blows my mind because honestly, can you even imagine anyone else playing Wolverine other than Hugh Jackman? He has literally played this character for 24 years. Like,
crazy. Yeah, it's crazy.
And then like, for them to be like, oh yeah, you're not doing so hot there, bub. Like, that is wild to me. Like, that is so wild to me. So anyway, it took him a while to fall into the character, but eventually he got there. And now, again, it is arguably his biggest role to date. But yeah, can you imagine like almost firing Hugh Jackman from the role of his life? Like, so that's all the Wolverine stuff. Other casting things that almost happened. Natalie Portman was first choice to play Rogue and she declined. Other people that were also up for Rogue, Katie Holmes, Kirsten Dunst, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Drew Barrymore, Alicia Silverstone, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Christina Ricci, all of those it girls from like the 90s were all in the running to play Rogue. And as far as Ian McKellen playing Magneto, Bryan Singer wanted Ian McKellen in this role so bad that he asked Patrick Stewart to help him get Ian McKellen to play Magneto. But Ian McKellen had already been offered the role of Gandalf and he really, really wanted to do Gandalf. And so Bryan Singer jumped through all kinds of hoops. He adjusted the production schedule, did all of these things and made sure that Ian McKellen finished filming in December of 99 so that he could leave to go to New Zealand for January 2000 to start filming his role as Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. Which Lord of the Rings at that time had already been in production for 3 months. So Ian McKellen came into Lord of the Rings late because he was finishing up his role in X-Men. And some other people that were up for the role of Magneto, Christopher Lee, who, funny enough, was also in Lord of the Rings as Sauron. Saruman. Terrence Stamp was up for the role. And David Hemblum. I don't know who that is. But... yes, Bryan Singer jumped through some hoops to make sure Ian McKellen could be in his film and be in Lord of the Rings. Other people up for Storm, Angela Bassett's name had been thrown around, Jada Pinkett Smith, Janet Jackson. Wow. Janet Jackson playing Storm.
That would have been awful.
Don't be hating on girl, Janet, like that. For Jean Grey, we almost had Lucy Lawless playing Jean Grey. Julianne Moore, Selma Blair, Renee O'Connor, and Maria Bello all were in the running. I'm so glad they gave it to Famke. I love her. And then for Cyclops, we had Luke Wilson, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Ethan Hawke, Johnny Lee Miller, Michael Biehn were all considered for Cyclops before James Marsden got it. This could have been a completely different movie. Like, Dougray Scott, Natalie Portman, Christopher Lee, Angela Bassett, Lucy Lawless. Like, this could have been a wildly different movie. Like, for real. I can't. That's all I got. It's a lot, but...
No, when you were talking about the Wolverine thing, I saw this meme the other day of Hugh Jackman... And it goes, Hugh Jackman getting ready to carry the MCU films, how he's been carrying the X-Men films for the last 20 years. Yeah. And I thought, I bet there's some truth in that. I would imagine they are trying to get him to stay in the MCU.
Yeah.
Because he obviously was never going to play Wolverine again.
Yeah. Well, he said that after Logan. He said he was done and then turned around and did Deadpool 3. I really want to know what it took to get him into Deadpool 3.
Well, I imagine it's... Oh, have I gone blank on his name? Deadpool, the actor.
Oh, Ryan Reynolds.
I imagine because they are the two best friends in real life.
Yeah.
And Ryan Reynolds, I can imagine, is super annoying.
Yeah.
So I think they've got a really good relationship. So yeah. I think that there's probably was an element of that.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, not one bit. But yeah, I can't, I mean, I just can't even believe it. 24 years he's been playing this character. And it started out to where he was like number 13 or 14 on the list. Like that reminds me of Bruce Willis in Die Hard, where they had asked every other actor under the sun and everybody else said no. And so finally they were like, okay, call that Bruce Willis guy. We'll get him in here to play John McClane. You know what I mean? And now like, you can't even imagine anybody else in Die Hard other than Bruce Willis. I feel like Wolverine is, or Hugh Jackman as Wolverine is the same thing.
That's, it's crazy to me, but, I don't know. I'm pleased that he got the role because I thought that for ages, who would play him now? So, but yeah. Right. So the IMDb summary for this movie: in a world where mutants, in brackets, evolved superpowered humans, exist and are discriminated against, two groups form from an inevitable clash: the Supremacist Brotherhood and the Pacifist X-Men. So that summary is very similar to the Generation X one, except for the rivalry bit. So.
Yeah.
Right, okay. For watching X-Men in 2002, what knowledge did you, Jasmine, have of the X-Men?
Just what I saw in the 92 animated series. That was my first introduction to the X-Men. That was all I knew about the X-Men at the time. My favorite X-Men was Gambit. I liked Gambit a lot because I have family from Louisiana and I got a kick out of his accent. That's why he was my favorite. My second favorite was Wolverine because he was wearing yellow and yellow was my favorite color. I was a child. I was not very picky. I really liked the cartoon. And then when this movie came out, I was really excited because I had liked the cartoon so much, but I had never ever, and to this day, I still haven't, like I've never read an X-Men comic.
That may change.
It might in a few weeks.
In a few weeks, you are going to read one. So, my knowledge of the X-Men. Do you know, I still remember this conversation I had in the car at like 14 with my mum. So I was familiar from being a child of Superman and Batman and Spider-Man. That was probably my main knowledge. I don't know as a kid what else you would really have come across. Maybe like saw glimpses of those weird Captain America TV movies and stuff that they had. But my knowledge was more of traditional superheroes. And I watched the Spider-Man animated series. I can't remember the exact ins and outs of whether it was my friend that took me to the comic book shop that told me about them or the X-Men animated series. But I remember being in the car, my mum even saying, these mutants, I was telling her about X-Men. She probably just didn't care. But I was telling her about them going, it's really weird. I was like, I was trying to explain it to her. And I was like, this is so weird. Like in terms of they're just born with power. So it's like, my mind couldn't really get around it. Like as a 14-year-old who was brand new to it. Anyway, and my friend Liam, the one who introduced me to Generation X and comics in general and all the rest of it, I don't think he was massively bothered about X-Men, but we both read the Onslaught saga together in 94 or whatever. But the first ever X-Men comic I read was a one-shot foil comic just called Sabretooth. Now, I'm assuming, I don't actually know, but I assume some X-Men storyline built up to this because they were all hunting Sabretooth, Cyclops, and they were trying to track him down, and it ends with him dying at the end. Obviously, he doesn't stay dead because he's come back about a million times since. And I remember the issue, they called it like Into the Red Zone or something. Uh-huh. And the art was fantastic. I remember the visuals, the inks, it was just a really good book. And I remember reading it twice, because I just thought it was pretty good. So my knowledge was what I just said there in terms of comics and animated series. I do like the X-Men, and I would probably say I love them. I feel like my anticipation of this movie wasn't up there with other things. But anyway, I've seen this movie. Like, so we're going to talk about, have we seen this movie before? I went to the cinema and saw it when it came out, and I've probably seen this movie 10 or 20 times since. Yeah. I thought, so you saw it at the cinema?
Yep. I was in high school.
Actually, what are your overall thoughts on this movie? I'll let you go first.
So I think I used to think that X2 was just like so great, and then going back and rewatching this one recently, this one's pretty damn good too. Like, it does such a good job of setting everything up. I really enjoy the setup of it. I also love that it starts out with a real life event, because it kind of sets this tone that's a little different for superhero films. Like, they talk about, you know, politicians and senators, and they're in New York City and this, that, and the other. And it's just like, plus, like, watching this movie now in the political climate that we are in, it's very like, this feels possible.
Like, yeah.
Despite the mutant element, like, this feels very grounded for like a superhero movie, just in the concept of like, they're different than we are, therefore we need to be tracking them because they're not like us. So I feel like the them versus us is really, really prevalent in this day and age. So like, even though this movie is 24 years old, like, it doesn't feel like it is out of date or like it's aged. Like, it holds up really well. I thought it was a nice introduction of characters. Like, it's a nice balance of the good guys versus the bad guys. It doesn't feel overstuffed. And I think that's probably because I know that the X-Men is like a giant troop of people, not just like the Justice League is like 8 to 10 people sometimes, you know, like, it's not a small bunch. Like, the X-Men have always been a very large group of people. And so like, normally we would complain like, oh, there's too many characters in this film, but like, I don't feel that way with this one because everyone has their place. Like, I don't know, it doesn't feel overstuffed when I feel like normally it would with 8 characters that you're supposed to be keeping up with. So I love it. I love the way that they lay it out. I love the, how the good and the bad guy used to be friends. Like, I love the setup. I love the world that they're building. I love the characters that we're being introduced to. And I like that everything is interesting enough that it's like, I want to know more about everybody. Like, I want to know everybody's backstory. How did they all wind up here with Charles Xavier, you know? So I thought this movie does a really, really, really good job of like dropping you into the world of the X-Men, which feels very much like it lays right on top of our world.
Mm-hmm. I think, I agree with you on many of the things you just said. I want to just talk about the character that you just talked about, where the volume of cast. I'd be disappointed if it had a slimmed down cast, if it, you know, just had the main X-Men and that was it. Mm-hmm. I think showing the school and showing even like background characters, when Charles said mentions Kitty and you see her run through the door, who has an X-Men, I know that's Shadow Cat, who actually is a much bigger X-Men character, who's recently been running a team book called Marauders in the X-Men world. So she's well-loved. She was on the Excalibur X-Men title that was around at the time I walked into the comic shop in the 90s. You see clearly a Jubilee with the yellow jacket also at his desk. I love the volume of characters in this, and they give that sort of school feel, which it is, a school. It kind of felt very similar to what we talked about last week on Generation X. I know we've got the same mansion, we've got the same sort of intros that we had. There's a lot of similar styles, strangely enough, taken from that $4 million budget movie that we came across. It's weird to me because I can't remember if I watched Generation X before or after this, if I'm honest. I know Generation X came out in 96, but with the, you know, obviously the back then, me in England being able to watch content from America was delayed sometimes years.
Yeah.
So I don't remember exactly when I saw both, but I do remember that it wasn't the year it came out in 96. It probably was a couple of years later, if not even after this movie. But yeah, so I probably back then didn't put together the crossover. But yeah, anyway, with this movie, I loved everything about it, the style of it. I love the pacing of it, how it wasn't just jumped into, oh, here's the X-Men. It was a concentration on a small group of people, like Rogue and Wolverine, before mm-hmm. we got introduced to a much bigger cast. The opening scene was phenomenal, starting off in Poland in 1944.
Yep.
Obviously, a young boy distressed, getting his powers, and that was a cool, real opening scene, and it really set the precedent for what this movie is. This isn't campy. This isn't Batman Forever or Batman and Robin. Right. This is a new style of movie, which we saw, you know, with Blade and with Spider-Man and other movies. Even, you know, what we talked about last week, even the Phantom from 1996 was trying to become slightly more serious. And it did a really phenomenal job back in 2000 to really change the public's perception of what superheroes were. And even Wolverine makes a crack about, no, it wasn't Wolverine. Was it Wolverine? I think it's Cyclops, actually. Sorry, about
wearing yellow
spandex. Yellow spandex.
Yeah.
And in the comics, they were wearing yellow spandex. So they must have said, no, we can't put them in yellow spandex in the movie. So, whilst there are clips of Wolverine in a yellow costume in Deadpool 3, so audiences' perception has changed again. But back then, I think they had to change audiences' perception because we had seen crappy superhero movie after crappy superhero movie. So they were like, no, we've got going with something a little bit darker. And this is darker. And do you know what? When I watched this yesterday, I watched it this morning, rewatched it, like I said, I've seen it about 20 times. It felt to me like a really short movie.
Yeah, it does.
Even though it's not, but it does feel like a really short movie. It goes very
well
quickly.
In today's standards, it is, though. Yeah. Like every movie now is over 2 hours long.
Yeah, definitely. So, right, characters. There is a huge cast of characters. Yeah. While some get bigger character development than others, and some characters, I'll be honest, the one I'm the most displeased with is actually Cyclops. They make him into a whiny little weasel, and that is not the Cyclops of the comics. I'll be honest, he's sometimes, I would say, leans into almost villainous purposes. So he's a lot darker and wants to get the job done a lot of the time. And I don't know. It's not, he was very weaselly in this film. I don't know about what you thought, but
I never liked his character. I didn't really like his character in the cartoon, and I definitely did not like his character in the film. But even though I didn't like him, I think they did Cyclops real dirty in X3, but that's a different story. That's another episode.
Oh, yeah, I think, I mean, the X-Men, in terms of Cyclops, he was like, how can we get rid of this guy in every movie? We know he's the leader, but how can we come up with a way of, every movie was like, how can we diminish him?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they wanted to just make Wolverine the leader of the X-Men.
Yeah.
I think we said in the last episode, or I think it was Link mentioning about what they loved was with First Class, that Wolverine wasn't in it.
Yeah.
And I think, Wolverine's a fantastic character and clearly has a following that is in the comics and in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not the only mutant, you know. I don't know what the percentage of mutants across the Earth is in the Marvel comics or in this X-Men film. But there is a lot of mutants out there, and there's a lot of really cool mutants out there. You know, it doesn't have to just be the Wolverine show, which... Even at the end, when this film was ending, towards the battle, it was like, oh, of course Wolverine's got to be the one who gets chucked in to save the day. However, I did notice it was really Cyclops that saved the day with his little optic blast with the shot Magneto in the shoulder. I think it was actually Cyclops that saved the day. So, I don't know, but did you have a favourite character?
I mean, I had two. It had to be. Like, I can't... There's so many great characters, but, like, it has to be Professor X and Magneto. They are fantastic in this movie. Like, they're just... They're so good. The way they play off of each other, the way that they are complete opposites in everything that they do. But, like, the way that you can see that they have this reverence for each other, even though they're on different sides of the issue, I just feel like you don't have that anymore. Like, you don't have the villain and the hero that can just sit down and like have a conversation, right? Like, that's so rare. And I just love the dichotomy that we get between Professor Xavier and Magneto. And plus, again, Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart. Like, even when I was a kid and watching like the 92 series, like, because I was a huge Star Trek Next Generation fan, even in 92, like, I could never have imagined anyone else playing Professor X except for Patrick Stewart. Like, there was never a question in my mind as a kid. And so the fact that they did that, everyone seemed to be on the same page there, I think, was some good stuff. But like, I just love them. Like, they're so much older, but they still have like, they have this history. And again, it's that push pull kind of dynamic, but like, they pretty much carry the film for me. So I'm definitely going to stick with the old guys on this one. Wolverine might be older, but like the old guys.
Well, yeah, I know what you mean. Well, the character of Wolverine is obviously a lot older, and he's pretty much immortal. So I do know what you mean, though. The dynamic between Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen was brilliant. The way they played off of each other.
Yeah.
It's that old school English acting classes that they must have gone to. So,
yeah. Stage actors. Leave it to the stage actors.
Yeah. I thought Ian McKellen was really good, really strong actor. I thought the ominousness of him. I like little things like, what are you doing up here, Charles?
Why do you ask questions to which you already know the answer? I swear, I use that phrase all the time. I still use that phrase.
I think my favorite character, though, was Rogue. Who was pretty much a Jubilee swap out, because in the comics, it's Jubilee the Wolverine kind of takes under his wing. I'm not really too sure why they didn't use Jubilee, but I enjoyed seeing her performance. I enjoyed the character journey from the vulnerable character at the beginning, screaming in the closet about what she did, going on the run, and then gaining confidence through joining the X-Men and becoming kind of a standalone, stronger character that we see at the end, and adapting and playing with Bobby and other mutants. And I thought it was a really good character journey that we got. It was one of the most, I think, fulfilling character journeys. A lot of the character journeys were quite minimal, if I'm honest. It was the best character journey we got in this movie.
Yeah.
And I love at the end when she goes after Wolverine, because she doesn't want him to go. Mm-hmm. But she has now also found a new home, where her parents obviously didn't want her around, and she's found a new home. And Wolverine kind of took on that surrogate dad bit, but she also recognizes that this place is going to look after her and protect her, so she's not going to go, Wolverine.
Yeah.
But he promises he's going to come back for her. I don't know, I really enjoyed that. I did think it was cool how they brought the little streak of grey hair in. Well, that was a cool twist that they did. No, to be honest, I didn't feel we needed the grey hair. But when they brought it in, I was like, that's a little bit of how they've tried to make her a bit like the comics. So,
you know, I'm the complete opposite there, because in the cartoon, Rogue and Gambit had a thing, and Rogue was older. So, like, in my head, I hated that they made Rogue a kid, because old, not old, but like older Rogue. And like, so,
25-year-old,
like,
Rogue or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So I felt like we missed out on a lot of that kind of banter, like Rogue running around calling everybody sugar. Like, I loved her. She was my favorite character in the cartoon, for sure.
Oh, yeah. No, okay. No, I agree.
And so, like, I was really disappointed with the Rogue casting in this movie, because I wanted an older Rogue. I didn't want a kid Rogue.
No, I agree with you about when I watched the film.
Mm.
Having loved the animated series, I was like, I loved the Rogue from the animated series. And I do agree with you, the accent and calling everyone sugar, and even in the comics, Rogue and Gambit are, you know, the kind of the lovers that can never happen because of her abilities. So her abilities are like a curse, but she adapts to that. No, I wasn't too keen on them bringing her in as a child. Well, I don't know what she's meant to be, 17 or something. And creating this love interest with Bobby, aka Iceman, who, by the way, now is actually gay in the comics. So Which actually, when I was watching this back today, I was like, oh, Bryan Singer didn't know that back then. So, well, no one knew that back then, so changed that recently. But I do agree. I wish they'd have made Jubilee the rogue. I'm not really sure why they went down that road.
Yeah,
I would have preferred a more adult rogue. But we didn't get that. And of what we did get, I enjoyed this version of Rogue.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Okay, so the structure of this movie and the plot and all the rest of it, just I like the fact that we, again, opening in 1944, before we then have the jump to the in the near future,
mm-hmm.
and it's slow-paced intro with Rogue and Wolverine before we then suddenly jumped into this political
mm-hmm.
Not, you know, registration stuff that's going on. And then we eventually end up with the build-up of the Brotherhood versus the X-Men. Just wondering what your thoughts really were on the structure of this movie.
I liked it. I like that this is basically like a superhero spy thriller, where it's kind of like, let's go steal a senator. Oh, what the hell? What do you mean steal a senator? I like that feel to it. Because to me, that kind of like spy thriller genre is probably one of my favorite genres of film. So the fact that like one of the through lines in a superhero movie is like, we're going to steal a senator, we're going to turn him into something that he hates, and then we're going to use him as a pawn for our political game. Like, I love that kind of element. And I just, again, I love the them versus us, because it's like, I can see validity on both sides of that argument. Like, I can understand where Magneto's coming from. I can also understand where Charles is coming from. So it's, I think a lot of times, like, I flip back and forth as to like, would I be a villain or would I be a hero? Like, sometimes I'm not so sure. Like, sometimes I think I lean more toward the villains, and it's like, you know what, screw these humans. Like, what have they ever done for me? So I love that this, the way that this plot is drawn out, there is no cut and dry, like, good guy, bad guy to me. I think there's a lot of gray area. So it's much easier to kind of watch the film and enjoy all of it, as opposed to like really, really just like digging your heels in to say, I want this guy to win, you know?
There's that whole thing about Magneto is right.
Mm-hmm.
I do get the argument back and forth of, you know, registering mutants. I don't know if registering mutants is really going to be of any help, but
no.
Registering mutants, because potentially some of their powers could be dangerous. But then equally, if you apply this to real life in America, you've got everybody that's got a gun registered, but it doesn't stop them from going up and shooting up schools.
Yep.
So, you know, just because you were to register every single mutant, are you telling me that they're suddenly now not going to go and, I don't know, kidnap politicians and turn them into some sort of liquid goo?
Yeah.
Probably not. Registering them isn't going to change that you can't control them or the actions of them. But I think that ultimately what the problem is, and, you know, to sound political here, why you guys haven't solved the gun problem is because it makes people a lot of money. And if mutants were real, if the government made money from it, like, i.e. if they said, right, okay, you've got mutant powers, you have to pay a tax.
Or they use them. Because I imagine it would be very much like in that last Fantastic Four movie. Yeah, like they would be turned into weapons. There's absolutely no way that any government that had these people would let them just like walk free. Like,
they
would do everything in their power to turn them into weapons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They say, you know, you've got to sign, you know, any mutant ability, you've got to sign up for, I don't know, 5 years. Or was it national service or something like that? Either some sort of tax or some sort of national service.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably would get around allowing them to be mutants. But it's because at the moment they're just walking around doing whatever they want.
Right.
And they don't like it. So, anyway, I personally wouldn't agree with a registration act. I don't think if they were to ever bring that into real life, would I ever like that? I'll be honest. So,
I mean, that's also the reason why I didn't like the Sokovia Accords either, like in the Avengers. Like, I just, I don't know. I don't like the idea of superheroes having to register anything. Superheroes, mutants, otherwise. Like, I don't like that idea at all.
It's a common plot thread that Marvel have done over the years.
So yeah.
Here we go. So, of the variety of plots and moments that we have through this movie, do you have a favorite scene or moment through this movie?
Favorites. It's hard to tell. Like, there's so many good ones. I definitely liked the scene at the train station where Magneto turns the guns on all the cops.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And pulls that one trigger and like it's holding that bullet. I love that sequence. I love the power battle between Charles and Magneto in that sequence, but I just also love that was how Magneto got himself out of that situation. It was like, you have two options. You're going to kill me or you're going to save these humans that you love so much. You pick. So I'm taking this mutant with me. So you're either going to kill me and stop me from doing that, or you're going to save your humans. You decide. So I did love that scene. And I think like this one, it's kind of silly, but like, on the train, the moment that Wolverine realizes that Magneto was not after him, that he was actually after Rogue the whole time, like that, like realization hitting Wolverine, I really like that scene. And just kind of like the aftermath of that follows, where now Wolverine is pissed and he's like, you guys told me he was coming after me. And Charles is like, no, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Like, just, he's so calm about it. Like, no, I made a grave error.
Do you know, when you talked about him making an error there, like earlier in the film when Wolverine escapes out of the room and ends up in Charles Xavier's office and he's like, oh yeah, we brought you back here for medical help. He's like, I don't need medical help. Patrick Stewart's character's like, oh yes, of course. And I'm like, what? I was like, so you're saying you knew he had a healing factor, but you still brought him back for medical help anyway? Yes, of course. Like, it's like he said it like he knew. It annoyed me. That writing part annoyed me. I didn't know how it was written. I didn't know if it was like, oh, he just suddenly realized, or if it was just terrible writing. And I don't know which one to go with. But that scene, I actually didn't like. I thought, I can't work out if that's really terrible writing or whether or not he's like, oh, yeah. Or whether it's just that he just wanted to bring him back. I think he just wanted to bring him back, but I don't know where I'm sitting with that. But I didn't. That scene felt badly written. If I'm honest, they could have come up with a different way of him just being honest. Well, I just wanted to bring him back.
I was curious.
The other thing
I liked was them Magneto and Charles playing chess at the very end as well.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was a good scene. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, one of the scenes I really enjoyed was towards the end of the battle where, because they created friction between Cyclops and Wolverine, but towards the end when they were getting into the Statue of Liberty, Wolverine had to fight another Wolverine, which was obviously Mystique. And then after he beats Mystique and he walks out and he's like, it's me. And they're like, can we be sure? And he goes, yeah, you're a dick. Okay. He's like, yeah, shit. And I thought to myself, whilst he said that, because he'd given Scott crap or like for the last few days or whatever, in a way that was like a bonding moment, and then that was really solidified later when they're all pinned down and Wolverine is now aware of the strengths of his teammates, where he chucks the visors at Jean, knowing that she has telekinesis, and obviously knowing what Scott's powers are, and he threw them across, and I thought that was cool to see that dynamic of them starting to become a team. And I like the fact that at the end, whilst I know it's like, oh yeah, Wolverine got to chuck me because I'm obviously the main X-Men, and but it was actually Cyclops that saved the day.
Yeah,
and I like the fact that he stood up. It was like, because Jean Grey was like, no, let Logan get it, and in the end, that Wolverine's like, Cyclops like, no, I'm gonna do it. And I thought, no, good, finally, you're meant to be the leader of the X-Men, not the Wolverine guy that just showed up 2 days ago. Right? So. So I like the fact that he finally
Mark has some real feelings about who's leading this.
Oh, it annoyed me back then. It still annoys me now. Like, yeah, okay, Wolverine's a really popular character. It's like when the Green Ranger joined, the Power Rangers. Like, they made him the leader.
Screw the red guy.
Basically, that's what happened. They got rid of him. Made him the White Ranger and got rid of him. This isn't Wolverine and the X-Men. And I know there has been a comic and a cartoon called that. But that hadn't have happened back then. But I honestly don't see why we couldn't have just still had, you know, Captain America as the leader, but he's not necessarily the most popular character of the team. So why we can't just have had Cyclops be the main character? Sorry, it annoyed me back then. It kind of annoys me now. But I love the fact that they did start to become a team at the end. Yeah. And the other bits I love, and I know this might seem really as not important, but I love the school scenes, like in the hallway, like Bobby chatting to a classmate, and you know, the foosball, and you know, the classroom scenes with the little fireball and the ice. And yeah, I love the fact that there's some kids in Xavier's office, and he clearly was given a lesson before Wolverine showed up. And for me, this is what the X-Men was about. And yeah, I love that time in the 90s when I first picked up X-Men comics, and they were living at the mansion, and it was a school first. But I obviously get that it's a superhero book, but
yeah,
I love those little scenes. And that's something we talked about last week with Generation X, how I love those scenes there as well. And I'm still going to say the same thing. So, right, okay, so there is some music in this movie, and none of it is pop chart, you know, classic early 2000s or anything like that. But I'm pleased about that. I think they could have ruined it if they'd have put in some cheesy Evanescence. And
we are past the Evanescence Renaissance at this point. So, oh, no, this is just before it, just before.
Well, you know, oh, yeah, it's the same studio. Obviously, Fox did Daredevil and Elektra. Mm-hmm. But Bryan Singer, it must have been Bryan Singer saying no. So it was actually an original score written and composed by Michael Kamen.
He had reached out to John Williams, and he wanted John Williams to do it, but John Williams was busy.
Oh. So this is essentially is a classic album, classical music album. Mm-hmm. And you can sense the importance of those scenes, especially in things like the Death Camp.
Yeah.
And scene, you can hear that classical music kicking in. Yeah.
But Bryan Singer said he did that because he wanted the film to feel grounded. That's why he started out the opening sequence, that cold open in the Holocaust. And that was one of the main reasons. So that's probably why there's no pop music or anything like that. Like, he really wanted this to not feel like all of those superhero films from the 90s. So that's why I always say, like, to me, this film, and especially because it hit in 2000, like, this film is what took us to that next level of superhero movie.
Is it, I know I just have a massive rant about Cyclops, but is there anything you potentially would have changed in this movie?
I think I'd stick with what I said about Rogue. I would have left Rogue as an adult. And maybe, like you said, I didn't realize that, because I've never read the comics, like, I didn't realize Wolverine and Jubilee were close. And maybe if that's the dynamic that they wanted to go with, I would have done that. But I really wish that they had utilized the dynamics that they built in that 92 cartoon a bit better, which I know is not fair to say, because, like, it's based on a comic, it's not based on a cartoon. But I just, at the time, I really missed that I didn't have that version of Rogue and there was no Gambit. Like, I really, really wanted there to be a Gambit. So just not having, like, a couple of my favorite characters there is just a personal thing that I would adjust. But as far as, like, what didn't work in the film, I could have done without the love triangle between Wolverine and Jean Grey and Cyclops. Like, I think that was unnecessary.
That again is a comic thing. So,
okay, well, on screen it just plays out odd. Also, I don't know. I think I would have used Mystique a bit differently. Like, she has a bigger role in subsequent films, which I think works to her advantage. But like, I just didn't like the silent assassin type. Like, she was a person of very few words, and I get it. Like, the makeup and all that stuff took so long, yada yada. But I feel like she could have been utilized a bit better. I also hated how they gave Storm that ridiculous accent. Apparently they all hated it too, because she didn't have an accent in the next film. So they fixed that issue very quickly. There's just little things that I would change, but as far as like overarching story or plot and all of those things, like, not much. Like, I just think that this is a really well done, really well paced film.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the plot, the pacing was perfect. I actually loved the politicalness of it all. And
for an hour and 44 minutes, like, you don't feel it. You don't feel the length at all. Like, everything flows really well. There's no lulls. There's no dull, like, nothing is out of place. Like, they did it. They used all 144 or hour and 44 minutes really well.
Yeah, I think the pacing and plot was perfect. The only thing I would do is, like you say, the character adjustments. And I get having main characters over sub-characters. What I would have done is I would have put Cyclops at the front. He's the leader of the X-Men. He should have been. If they didn't have the confidence around James Marsden, maybe recast him. And actually looking at him, he felt like a little boy in some scenes. If I'm honest, maybe he was a little bit too young. Maybe they could have gone with someone a little bit, not massively older. I wouldn't have wanted it to be weird between him and Jean Grey, but maybe they needed someone that had a bit more of a strong screen presence. So,
At the time, they could have used Ethan Hawke. He would have been good. He was on the list. Johnny Lee Miller could have been interesting. I do love Johnny Lee Miller.
Yeah. I agree with you. I would rather have seen a Jubilee or something. I don't know. I guess what they probably tried to do is make it fit the story.
Yeah.
Because if they'd have swapped Jubilee out with Rogue, how would Jubilee's powers of, you know, her fireworks from her hands have really been a benefit to Magneto trying to change all these politicians into mutants? So I'm assuming that's why he swapped that out and put in a much younger Rogue, because I'm much more familiar with an animated series and comic book with an adult Rogue. Even the animated series opens up with a child Jubilee running through a shopping mall. And Jubilee, you know, obviously, like I talked about Generation X, my first interaction with Jubilee was in Generation X, coming in as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just weird to me. It was probably done for narrative purposes. So, yeah, hopefully MCU can figure out a different way of bringing in a Jubilee and a Rogue. I would much more rather the adult version. But look, in terms of changing it, I don't think I really would actually change it. I'm happy with what we've got, but I hope that the next generation of mutants that the MCU bring in can give us a teenage Jubilee and an adult Rogue. So,
fingers crossed.
I just thought the last few episodes have been shouting out things that have happened in the same year. I'll take a slightly different approach here. Rather than worst or best films, I'd shout out the other movies that came out in 2002 that were superhero movies. We had Spider-Man, the Tobey Maguire one, Blade 2. Now, I haven't seen the next one, which is the Powerpuff Girls.
It's fantastic.
And The Road to Perdition, which is based off a graphic novel. So, you can see a real sign of change here. I think, you know, Blade 2, Spider-Man, Road to Perdition, much more serious and much more grounded, which this movie is completely in the league of Blade and Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah, this felt like the passing of the torch. This was like, this film to me signaled, okay, the superhero movies of the 90s, we're done with that. All of that cheesiness, all of those, like all of that has ended. This is a new era of superhero film. And then it all changed again in 2008 with Iron Man. So we had an 8-year run of this new gen comic book film. And then Marvel took it to the stratosphere when we got Iron Man. And so
I think it's the money they must have made from X-Men and Spider-Man that sorted them out to create. I know they did have to borrow, but I would imagine those films gave the confidence. Because I know with Iron Man, for instance, that they went to the bank and they borrowed money and they pledged the license of 10 properties to the bank to fund this. So they essentially borrowed against the intellectual property of Iron Man and a bunch of others, and they did well. So and then Disney came and bought them. But I think to buy them with that confidence was things like these X-Men and Spider-Man films and the Blade films. So,
well, you know, also though, we're talking about Rogue, and I just remembered, I read somewhere that in the comics, Rogue has some kind of connection to Miss Marvel.
Captain Marvel, yeah.
Yeah, and so like something about their interaction is kind of what caused Rogue to have all of the abilities that she had in the show, where she can fly and do all these other things.
Yeah, they would take Captain Marvel.
But so Fox didn't have the rights to that character. And so because they didn't have the rights to that, they figured we can't give Rogue her normal backstory because we don't have the character that is pivotal to her backstory. So I think that could also be another reason why we got a young Rogue instead of the older one.
Yeah, because when Rogue touches you, she takes your abilities if you're a mutant. And I think in the comics she touched Captain Marvel and took, obviously, and she's retained a lot of her abilities. So the flight and strength and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's weird that they did that in the animated show, even though they didn't have the rights but to Captain Marvel. But I guess you just, I'm assuming you'd think that those were just part of her abilities.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I did until I read otherwise. So that's another reason why only having the knowledge of the cartoon and then seeing this film, that was, so before you get the whole picture, like back then, this film was good, but disappointing because it wasn't what I was expecting, like what I had seen in the cartoon. But obviously, again, now, like I can go back now and look at this film for what it is, and I still think that this is a really fantastic film.
Some other notable films that came out the same year in 2002 was The Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, Gangs of New York, The Bourne Identity, and Chicago. Just thought I'd shout out a few things because I think it just takes you back to actually what else is going on in the world, in the media world, really, in terms of what people were consuming. It's crazy to think those are a lot of good films on there. So yeah. I think X-Men is some good company.
Definitely. Especially like in the same company as Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah. And considering the connection with Ian McKellen as well.
Yeah.
Right. What would you rate this film? I mean, do you want to rate it twice, like as in 2000 and or now? Or
okay. When I originally saw that, I probably would have given this film a 3.5. And now I'd probably give this film like a 4, 4.5.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I think at the time I thought it was amazing, this movie. I was just so pleased that we'd moved past the crazy batshit Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. I was glad that we'd moved past that campiness of awful movies that we had. So I probably would have given this like a 5 back then in 2000. Okay. And the fact that I've rewatched this movie so many times, I think now I probably would give it slightly less, give it 4 out of 5, just because actually it does annoy me. And it annoys me about a lot of properties when they make one person the center, especially when that one person isn't actually like the leader.
Right.
So that, you know, if I'm honest, kind of annoys me. And it's even like things like how underutilized is Halle Berry. So
yes.
Yeah. I know they tried to make up for it, but
yeah. So that's a conversation for next week's episode, though.
Okay, so well said. Next week we will be reviewing on episode 157 X2 from 2003, and you'll have to come back and continue our journey through the X world. You can follow us on social media. We are Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Sorry, Geeks Unleashed on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Yes, and you can get this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Google, Podbean, Apple, Spotify, we are everywhere. So please leave us a 5-star review and tell your geeky friends.
Goodbye.
Good journey.